Hello and welcome to the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. This is episode number 9, and as you can hear, I'm not in studio. I'm actually sitting in the Technology and Innovation Centre in Strathclyde University, because this entire episode is devoted to what is the now annual Sight and Sound Getting AT Ready event. If you want to know more about Getting AT Ready, you're going to hear lots about it over the next 25 or so minutes. Stay right where you are and enjoy this episode. Well, you are very welcome into our very special podcast from the AT Ready event here in Glasgow. I'm standing in Strathclyde University. It's getting busy. It's early in the morning. People are arriving for their networking breakfast and registration. And let's see if I can slip outside with Ruth Gallagher Carr and Caroline Smith from Sight and Sound, who've been organizing this event, and have a chat with them. Well, what a beautiful morning it is, and I've escaped from the manicness, because it is manic inside in Strathclyde University. There's lots of people at the AT Ready event, but I'm with Caroline Smith, who's Head of Education, and Ruth Gallagher Carr, who's Business Development Manager for Scotland. Ladies, welcome. Thank you for jumping out with me for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Stuart. You're welcome, Stuart.
It's brilliant. Ruth, what is AT Ready?
AT Ready is an event which we've put together to bring together disability professionals to learn about new tech, to share best practice, and generally just to talk to each other, network, and get the opportunity to learn from each other.
Right, and there's lots of that going on already, and we haven't even started the formal part of the day yet. Caroline, how did this, because this isn't the first time you've done this, right?
No, Stuart, you're right. This is our fourth year, which is very, very exciting, biggest and best yet. It started 4 years ago from an idea that we came up with through our own AT strategy, and a colleague of ours at City of Glasgow College kindly said, why don't we put on an event so we would invite practitioners or our stakeholders to come to us rather than us go to them. And so Getting AT Ready was born. Thanks to Ruth for the great title.
Brilliant. What are people saying? Because I'm imagining, and just even sort of observing the 20 or so minutes I've been in there this morning, there's a great, people are chatting, you seem to have created a great, I guess, space for people to network amongst the profession. What are people saying to you, Ruth, about events like this?
They're saying, well, exactly that, Stuart, that it's a great opportunity to actually get together. I mean, the academic calendar is a bit of a brutal one, so it's very difficult for disability professionals to actually get together and chat. Also, geographically, they're all over the place. So even with the best intentions through email networks and things like that, these things can kind of fall by the wayside. So what Getting AT Ready does is get these people together and give them space and time and a load of resources to actually benefit from and share. Share is the key word here, I think.
And sharing, and that's it. And what, Caroline, because I know there's going to be loads of seminars, loads of workshops, there's lots of things going on today, there's lots of information going to be shared, and you're sharing a lot of it on the web, aren't you?
Yes, we are. We share it on our website, which is www.atready.co.uk. Interestingly, we have visitors from your neck of the woods coming over to see us today. So we've got a keynote from the University College Dublin, who kindly agreed to share their knowledge and experiences around their university toolkit for all, which is very exciting. And we have workshops from a number of our friends and colleagues. One of them in particular that we're very excited about is from our friends at Glasgow Kelvin College, which is Gary and Tom, who are going to be talking about their baseline of AT knowledge, engaging with academics. And we are very, very excited about everyone, and we couldn't be happier. And we have to say a great big thank you to all our presenters and workshop people today, and I'm sure we'll be buying them all a drink later on.
Okay, right, I'll be there for that. It's really interesting when you go to an event like this and you sit in an auditorium and it's full of people who want to do the right thing, who want to make stuff accessible. And Ruth, I guess in your day-to-day work over here in Glasgow, that must make you pretty happy.
Well, that's it. I think that's one of the reasons why the event is a big deal for us. It's a lot of work, but we love doing it, and we really actually enjoy the day, because it's a time when we get to join the dots. So you imagine we're touring around Scotland, chatting to these people on an individual basis regularly, and this is the one time we get to get them all together, jump up and down, quite literally, and tell them about all the exciting things that we've seen in little pockets of Scotland and further afield, as Caroline mentioned, the couple of ladies coming over from Dublin. It's a time when we can get excited, have the freedom to get excited about this stuff, because sometimes it can just be the day-to-day stuff that you end up dealing with. This is the opportunity to get excited.
Okay, and we're very excited. We're hoping to bring lots of it to you over the next little while on this podcast. It's, according to my phone, 9:23. We better go in because Glenn Tookey is going to take to the main stage very shortly. Ruth and Caroline, thanks a million for chatting.
Thanks, Stuart. Thanks, go Stuart. Team Scotland.
Thanks very much to Ruth and Caroline there. They're extremely busy and greatly appreciate the time they gave us. We're just about to go into the opening address now with Glenn Tookey and Dr. Stephanie McKendry from the University of Strathclyde. Let's have a listen.
Lovely to see you all on a perfect Glasgow day, as you get. We're here. We've got the rules lineup that we have. We have two keynote presentations. We have our famous panel discussion, which hopefully will be lively as we cover strategic topics and policy type issues. We're really keen for you to input and ask lots of questions and get the whole thing going. That will be very good. Then we run into our workshop sessions, and we've got day-to-day issues covered. We've got strategic issues covered. So we'd like you to get round to the mall and spend your time listening and inputting to those. Again, they're two-way workshops. We'd like you to sit and listen. We need to get involved as well and get as much out of them as you can. And as ever, we have our exhibition. We have 20 guests over two floors, so make sure you find them all. And as ever, again, we make the exhibition integrate with the workshops as well, so you have time to get through and talk to all those guys who've come to see you and talk to you, so please take time to talk to them as well. So, without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Stephanie McKendry, Widening Access Manager here at Strathclyde, and she's going to talk to you with some feedback. Thanks very much and welcome.
Lovely to speak to you, and welcome to the University of Strathclyde. It's my great pleasure to provide the welcome address as Institutional Lead for Access, a role which within Strathclyde encompasses widening participation to higher education, as well as our work on equality and inclusion. Whilst I don't directly work in the area of support for students with disabilities and assistive technologies, I believe there's much overlap and some common core principles between your area of expertise, research and practice, and mine. Firstly, widening access or widening participation, equality and disability support all strive for inclusion. Specifically, within our education sector, making engaging and impactful learning, teaching and assessment inclusive for all learners, be they from care experience backgrounds, disadvantaged neighbourhoods, black and minority ethnic communities, trans and gender diverse students, or those with disabilities. We wish to create learning which people from all backgrounds are able to access, in whose curriculum they can see themselves reflected and valued, and in which they can progress and succeed. Where there are specific barriers we can anticipate, we strive to put effective support in place, such as funding, accessible venues, gender-neutral facilities, alternative assessments, or assistive technologies. Secondly, the theme of the conference is as resonant across access, equality, and inclusion. Today, you'll be discussing who has responsibility for accessibility. It's a really important question, and one that should also be asked of my area of work, of access and inclusion more generally. And I believe, I hope, we will give similar answers to that question. That accessibility and inclusive practice should ideally be embedded, not as nice to have special projects owned and delivered by those with a particular interest or speciality, but as need to have core business at every stage and level of an institution.
That was Glenn Tookey and Dr. Stephanie McKendry from the University of Strathclyde. And we're just midway through the morning break here. very active panel discussion just before break. All sorts of discussions coming up around the DSA, Disabled Students Allowance, and funding and accessibility. And of course, the big theme at this event is accessibility. Whose responsibility is it? So we're going to be circulating for the remainder of the podcast, chatting to attendees, eavesdropping on some of the workshops, and getting a sense of what AT Ready is all about. We're at the exhibition area here at AT Ready in Glasgow, and I'm with Michael Humphreys. And Michael, you've been telling me about, just off air, about what your company does in the line of assessment software. So welcome to our podcast, first of all.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about ORAC, which is your company.
So ORAC was designed to help assessment centres put a workflow in place that students could come in, they could get assessed, the reports could be dealt with in a timely manner and in a secure manner, and then passed on to the funders. We find that centres all had their own way of doing that before, so we're trying to make that a more straightforward process that's unified.
So who's using, or who would be your target audience for this?
Any assessment centre that would have students with a disability coming in who get funding, and it must be through the Disabled Students Allowance scheme.
Okay, so data is entered into the ORAC system and then uploaded centrally?
Yes, we have a cloud-based system, everything's encrypted as it transfers to the cloud, and once it reaches the cloud, it's stored in an encrypted format, so you can appreciate medical evidence is very sensitive in this nature, so we make sure that that's secure at all times.
And I suppose with current, emphasis on things like GDPR, that's extremely important.
It is, and again, every centre had their own interpretation of how that should look, so we're trying to standardise that with one platform.
What have people been saying about ORAC? Because I can imagine a consistent platform and a way of streamlining assessment information must be hugely important.
It is. It's quite nice. We've got it into a number of universities and get support calls from them saying how well it's working rather than complaining it's not, which is quite novel. So we're delighted with how it's going.
Brilliant. If people are listening and might like to find out more, are you guys on the web?
Yes, we are. It's ORAC, ORAC.support.
Michael, thanks very much for chatting to us.
Thank you.
I've just come out of a really interesting workshop all about baselines in assistive technology, delivered by Glasgow Kelvin College and Tom McInnes from Glasgow Kelvin College. Great Scottish name is with me. Tom, welcome to our podcast.
Hi.
Thanks for chatting to us today.
Not a problem.
We've been having really interesting discussions off air, and really wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about what you're doing at Glasgow Kelvin College. So tell us first of all about what your role is in the college.
Okay, so I'm dual contracted with the college. I am a learning technologist and a digital skills lecturer.
Okay, the learning technologist, what is that? What does that encompass?
So the learning technologist role is essentially looking after the online platforms. Now we have a virtual learning environment, which is the Moodle platform, and we also heavily utilise the Microsoft Office 365 suite. So what we've had to do over the last 3 or 4 years since its implementation is upskill staff. I'm responsible for the staff training and awareness, and I'm also responsible for the development and delivery of online resources.
You mentioned Microsoft Office, and I suppose with the increasing numbers of people using and being strongly encouraged, I suppose, to use Office 365 these days, Microsoft have committed quite a bit of their resources to accessibility, haven't they?
They have indeed, and that's been a thing. From what I understand from Hector Minto at Microsoft, that's been ongoing now for probably about the last 3 or 4 years, where they've ramped up the development. What was really quite impressive about Microsoft approach is the Microsoft Mechanics and Dynamics departments, and essentially every member of staff who works on an accessibility feature actually has the disability, if you like, that's required for that feature. So if you're working on tools for the visually impaired, you'll find that the coders who are working on that are actually visually impaired, so it's created from source. And I think that approach has actually been beneficial for us. We've seen significant changes this year in the updates within the 365 environment to start to mirror a lot of the work that has to be said has been carried out by Google Education as well.
You talked as well at your workshop about the Microsoft Accessibility Checker, which I was familiar with, but one thing I wasn't familiar with until today, was that this thing is going to be on by default very soon.
Yes.
Which is brilliant.
So the thinking behind that, because as you witnessed today, we have the Connect Accessibility Awareness course that we created within Moodle, and that introduces a lot of the 365 tools, one of which being the Accessibility Checker. The new update that comes out this summer for our college environment will allow our IT systems to turn the checker on by default. So we remove the necessity for staff creating new content to actually run it through an accessibility checker after its creation. What will happen now is as they are working on PowerPoint or Word or Excel documents, the pop-up box will alert them when they've breached an accessibility feature, for example, not including alternative text to an image that they've inserted. Mm-hmm.
So straight away, before they even publish the thing, they say, hang on, I need to fix this because it's not going to be fully accessible to my student body.
Yeah, and that's the thinking from the Access and Inclusion Committee going forward, and certainly that's what's been fed back to our senior management. There's a whole ethos here is to create the content in an accessible way before it's deployed. We're trying now to get away from the compliance approach where we're adding accessibility tools after the fact to basically meet the legislative requirements.
One of the big areas and the hot topics, I suppose, nowadays, and we see this a lot in schools, is collaboration. People want to be able to simultaneously, numbers of people working on the same project, the same document, whatever it is. And this has been challenging. I know, certainly speaking as a screen reader user, we had, and I did some testing with this last year with Google Docs, to some degree of success. What's that like at the moment on the platforms that you're using?
I think I would agree that it's actually the same on both platforms. I think, again, this has actually been an afterthought. So what essentially has happened here before the iteration of the update coming in the summer is the collaboration feature, the collaboration tool, the real-time document editing globally, is something that's being pushed through a 21st century learning design and a 21st century skill set. Now, that's because the future problems, the kind of famines and the energy shortages and everything else that our young people are going to face in the future are going to have to be solved in a global way. So they have to be able to utilise the technology, communicate effectively, do the research, feedback and feed into a single community. Now that's the skills that we're trying to teach them. To answer your question with regards to the screen reader, I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to ask you to come back to me in the summer when we've had the update.
Fair enough. We might maybe bring you on again.
Yeah,
talk
absolutely.
About this later on. I suppose the other big thing is that mobile is playing a bigger part in how consume information, how we interact with information, and how we learn.
Yep.
And people are being strongly encouraged now to use their devices in the classroom. How do you think that's going to pan out around all this stuff that we're talking about?
I think from absorbing and kind of accessing content and kind of utilising information that's available on the internet, then absolutely most of our students are equipped with an iPhone, a 4G kind of iPhone, or an Android, I should say. So they have a smartphone of some description. Now, when you get beyond the understanding that it's not a phone, it's a computer that makes phone calls, then you understand that you have a very significant tool in your pocket. The standard delivery within Scotland, because it's still very much based on an industrial kind of creation of the education system in the 1800s, is that kind of regurgitation of presented information. Going forward into the 21st century, it's impossible to kind of maintain that. What we're finding now is essentially we have a disparity between what is required from an assessment strategy with the Scottish Qualifications Authority and how we utilise technology in the classroom, and that gap is being slowly kind of reduced to we kind of have a tie-in between the two. And I think what we'll see in the future is assessment support packs will be changed to accurately reflect the use of technology and the way that we utilise the internet as a research and resource base.
And I suppose finally, Tom, and I'm conscious of your time, the amount of time you've given us today, do you think, and I suppose people going into different educational courses, whether they be using Microsoft or Gmail platforms or Google platforms, do you think those mainstream, major mainstream tech companies who are making their services accessible are taking feedback and acting on feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. And because we predominantly work with Microsoft, and because we're a Microsoft tenancy, I'm only going to speak for Microsoft. So Microsoft have a flag up system now where, as part of the Microsoft Educator community, if you pick up on issues or you notice shortfalls within their software set, you can flag it up. And then what happens is the rest of the community will like or dislike what you've had to say. When it gets to the top 10% of the list, the developers automatically pick it up and make the improvements. So what they're doing is they're taking live global feedback from an education community, which is essentially global now, from all aspects, and then they make the developments from that. And I don't think that would be any different from any other software company. They make the product, and then they wait for the feedback, and then they make the necessary changes as and when required. And I think that's probably a cost-effective way for software development companies to behave. What I would say is, from our point of view, without sounding like a plug for Microsoft, obviously, is that it's actually came to fruition and it does work. So when you're kind of you're noticing these kind of issues or these small changes or things that don't actually work the way they envisaged, you normally find that in multiple countries with multiple kind of educational specialists and teachers and the like, that they've already picked up on this through using the technology themselves. And because the sources are kind of global now, that's when the development teams will answer.
Social media has also become a great way to maybe motivate people to, I suppose, feedback to these companies in mass, you know, on I suppose platforms like Twitter, get in touch with the Microsoft accessibility teams, and I think they do kind of listen, don't they?
Oh, of course, they have to listen because it's hugely influential, you know, and there's plenty of people now that are using social media simply as a revenue stream and a way of making a living, and that comes from the advertisement that's generated based on followers. So the more folk that you have following you and you're influencing, then of course you're going to influence companies kind of worldwide. It's a highly effective tool if it's utilised properly. The difference is if you're not kind of getting the followers and you don't have the kind of the numbers with regards to people. And there was a very interesting kind of example of this. There's a very popular kind of newsreader in Scotland who's just retired, and she was describing how her son set up a Twitter account in her name and waited until she had 50,000 followers and then changed the name back to his because he knew that he was going to be able to influence going forward. And I thought that was a very, very tech-savvy way of putting himself on the social media spectrum.
All you need is a celebrity mum, I suppose.
Well, that's it. You know, that would help, wouldn't it? Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Tom, really appreciate your time. Thank you for, I suppose, giving us a real glimpse into what's happening now, but maybe more importantly, where it's all going in a relatively short period of time. And we do want to bring you back after the summer, so let's make a return to the Slide to 10 podcast before the end of the year.
Okay? I'd be delighted.
Thanks a million.
Thanks, now.
I'm here to talk about the SFP mystery, so Student Finance England, how to speak their language. I don't in any way think that I'm an expert on this, this is what I live and breathe every day as part of my day job, so I've been invited along to speak to you about it. Just to get a thought, are people in the room need assessors or dealing with Student Finance England queries regularly? Yeah? Right, okay. Hopefully this will be relevant and you'll take something away from it. To start, I like to kind of walk about down here, so can everyone hear okay? Or I'll go and use one of the mics if you want, but if you can hear me then we're good. Right, perfect. Alright. So, a little bit about me, it's already in the brochure, which I spotted as a photograph of me. I didn't realise that was in there, but yeah. So I've been working in the DSA sector since 2013 as a NEET assessor, centre manager, and now currently the service director for Access to Learn. We've got 16 DSA assessment centres across the country, and I manage them from Edinburgh. So, remote work from there. I've got central administration team, quality assurance staff, and a team of over 25 freelance NEET assessors across England. So we primarily see students from Student Finance England, but we'll also assess all the other funding bodies as well. So Wales, Northern Ireland, SACS, and also I still do workplace access assessments in Scotland. So I go out and do assistive technology and reasonable adjustment recommendations in the workplace, and more recently as well, student ergonomic assessments in Scotland as well. So I go and visit students to do that. So a little bit about Access to Learn. This is where all of our assessment centres are. So we're quite well spread, right down the bottom, Plymouth and Falmouth, across London, Southampton, and then far north as Newcastle, with a fair few across the middle. So yeah, we're quite a young company as well, so May 2016, first assessment was conducted, and since that time, we've now expanded to be the second largest DSA NEET assessment provider by volume of centres, and we're still growing. So So hopefully, due to approval for our next centre, it should be open in the next 3 months, as long as we pass our QUAG audit, which are the regulators for DSA England. So during that time now, we've conducted over 4,000 needs assessments, but despite being a very young company, our staff base have been working in DSA for much longer, so we might only have formed in May 2016, but all the people that are there. And surprisingly, with that amount of centres, we only have 7 full-time members of staff. So myself in Edinburgh, we have our quality assurance staff in London. Southampton is the main office, so we've got a few staff in Southampton that deal with all the bookings and all the contact. And then we've got some student consultants, and one of them is based in Essex. And there's a web link there to about us, but as far as I know, Caroline's going to send the slides out, so you'll get access to this, and you can go and have a wee look if you want to find out more. So 25 freelance needs assessors based across the UK. But the best thing about our service or our systems are bespoke. So we've got a bespoke self-built database to track all of our student records, interactions, queries, reports, KPI data, the whole lot, which works really well for what I'm chatting about today, because I'm able to look at queries and things that come up regularly and access all the different students that have had that support or that recommendation and look at all the reports and all the wording and all the DSA officer stuff, and it's quite handy. So yeah, we'll look at that. I've got some case studies in the report in my presentation that we can look at. So since we're chatting about Student Finance England, I thought I'd give you an update for application numbers. So the types of volumes that are coming through across England. I got this directed from SFE at a conference that I was at last month down in Coventry. So you can see at the top for 17-18, they had over 81,000 applications received, 61,000 made eligible at DSA 1 stage, 14,000 were rejected, 5,200 were appended. And then that DSA 2 status recorded is how many of that 61,000 went through to the very end, got their needs assessment, and then got their notification saying, right, that's great, we've approved, you can get your equipment, call your supplier and get it put in place. You'll see that they're already, and that's jumped again, it's 18,000 applications already in for the 1920 intake. We're already seeing an assessing students for 1920. We've already got there across the board for DSA sector in total in England, 740 DSA 2s released up to the 23rd of April for students that are not starting the courses until September. So that's jumping. And the applications they've said are jumping now because they've only just started accepting applications online. So you can apply for DSA funded online when you couldn't do it before.
Well, that's just about it from our AT Ready event here in Glasgow. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the glimpses at the workshops and the interviews that we brought you. And we only got to bring you a very small selection of what's been going on here today. The venue, as you can hear, is quietened right down. It's after 4 on Friday. Most people have gone. It's time for us to go. Thank you for listening, and join us soon for the next Sight and Sound podcast. Until then, this is Stuart Lawler saying goodbye.